Listen, we're excited. 2028 is coming faster and faster, but we've got to get through 2026 first, and there are all kinds of things that are happening out there. Where do you want to start today?
You want to start with the DNC playbook that they just released within the last 24 hours?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. You tried to get on that thing. What happened when you tried to log in the first time?
So according to social media, the DNC has released about a 208-page playbook on running for office, winning elections, how to campaign, strategy, tactics, case studies. I tried to get on this morning to be able to download it, and I got a 429 error that there were too many requests for it. So,
nice.
That is, I guess, good that a lot of people are interested in this, bad from a technology standpoint that it wasn't available. I was actually able to get on and download it a little bit later on. So I have skimmed it. I have not read it in detail. So I can't really speak to the content too much, but it is getting a lot of attention on social media, and people have many feelings about it, as you can imagine.
Well, look, we got big races that are taking place this year, as you know, in 2026. Yep. Also, we still have these special elections that are taking place around the country, and Democrats are doing very well. Last weekend, we saw the No Kings protest happen, and tens and hundreds of thousands of people from all over the country showed up to protest Trump. There's a lot of energy out there, and the trick is turning all that protest energy, all that anxiety about the war, all that all the people who are upset about what happened in Minneapolis and the deaths, turning that into electoral energy that's going to get behind some of these Democratic candidates and get them over the finish line.
Yeah, and I think that the playbook is trying to do that. It is trying to harness the energy. It's trying to put the tools into people's hands so that they can start running for office, so that they can start supporting candidates running for office more effectively, and see some of the change that we're looking for. You know, if you look at the reaction to it online, I mean, the most kind of frequently repeated comments are sort of like, you know, I'm 100 pages in and there's no mention of policy in this book. So, you know, I'm putting it down. Like,
We need an applause.
This is again,
line for that. Because it should be agnostic.
Yes.
This is
say that again.
The playbook should be agnostic. The playbook should be like, here's
totally
how you do
agnostic.
It,
yes.
Not here's what you say, right?
Yes, this is, again, the DNC is not a policy-making organization. It is a campaign organization. It is to build structure for the Democratic Party all across the country. Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries do not check in with the chair, Ken Martin, on what any policy should be, what gets through to the Senate floor. None of this stuff. Like, this, the DNC does not have the power to control the agenda. Those are the leaders of the party. Now, you can like those leaders or not like those leaders, but those are the ones making the decisions. And, you know, if you want to see changes in policy in the Democratic Party, you've got to change the leadership. So,
if you're running in Minneapolis, if you're running in Idaho, if you're running in Georgia, you might have some different issues in the National Party. And so while we ought to have some overarching issues and some big themes and principles, how that shows up in your individual race might be different state to state and, you know, district to district.
Completely and totally different. And look, the policy of this party is made by the leadership, and in 2028, it's going to be made by the nominee.
Yeah.
Like, that's who's going to dictate what the Democratic Party stands for on a national level. And while we don't have kind of that strong national kind of singular leadership right now, you're not going to see that coming out of the DNC. So people who are looking for that are just looking for the wrong things. But what I will say is, it does seem to give tools for organizing, and it seems like the DNC is doing a good job of organizing in advance of the midterm elections. There's, you know, if you look down kind of farther down, you see a post from the South Carolina Democratic Party, and it says that they have a Democratic candidate in all 124 state legislative races this
year. Fantastic.
That is a huge deal. It has never happened before, but that's what we need. We need to have people running up and down the ballot to really be able to carry out this energy. So this is all a really, really good thing.
Yeah, what's the a saying, if you want to catch lightning in the bottle, the first thing you need is a bottle, right? So if you don't have a candidate running, then there's no way, if there's a wave coming, there's no raft to catch the wave. So you got to have enough candidates that are running in these races so that if a wave comes, they can catch that wave and they can get into election day and maybe surprise some Republicans places that they don't expect.
Yeah. And it's good strategy too, right? I mean, if there are 124 candidates running in South Carolina, the Republicans have to pay attention to all of those races. They can't just concentrate their resources on the swing districts. They've got to be worried about their kind of left flank. So, and as we've seen with these special elections, Democrats are winning in very red districts. So this is great news. And look, the DNC is doing what it can, and I hope it's good. I've got plenty of criticisms of the Democratic Party, but this is not really the format for that.
I will say,
or the forum for that.
I have been in a statewide election organization party, and I remember trying to field candidates, and all we had this philosophy: we're going to field candidates in all the races. Some of those candidates, I will say, were not the strongest candidates. I mean, I think one time we got like the tech guy, you know, from down like the downstairs, the guy who like put the computer cables on the computers. But he lived in the perfect county, and so we put his name on the ballot because, you know,
great, we're not,
no free licks. Everybody's got to run here.
Let's do it.
You know, I was looking at something. Because we've had this back and forth about candidates who are running and books, like to book or not to book, right? Like how many people are actually running with books on the ballot? And so I took a look today to see, because last week, Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, he announced that he had a new book come out called Stand. So that book's out. He's been out everywhere flacking it, trying to get people to pay attention to it, Stand. And it's a book about virtues and values and politics, because this is very Cory Booker. And Cory Booker speaks, he's always talking, you know, kind of from like a more spiritual plane, I guess. So it made me go back and look and see who else had books. So just to refresh our memory, Gavin Newsom, his book came out. It's called Young Man in a Hurry. He's been on this Red State reading tour. So he's been in Nashville, Atlanta, South Carolina. So he's going to some early states, Georgia, South Carolina. He's also been in New Hampshire on March 5th. He was in New Hampshire. And then Pete Buttigieg does not have a book. Kamala Harris obviously had 107 days. She did a huge book tour around that. She's also, she's going to Arizona, and she's going to Arkansas, which is a caucus, an early state, but not like in the first four, but it's a big state. It's going to be her first keynote speech. That's going to be April 25th. So I think a lot of people will pay attention to that. It's her first big keynote political speech. And then Shapiro, he's got Josh Shapiro, governor of Pennsylvania. His is called Where We Keep the Light, Stories from a Life of Service. I'm trying to read my handwriting here. Where We Keep the Light, Stories from a Life of Service, the Josh Shapiro book. I think those are the ones with the big books that are out there. Shapiro, Newsom, now Booker, Harris. And we'll see who else gets a book going in the course of the next year. It seems to be the prerequisite.
Yeah, Bashir has one coming out in September, I think.
Oh, there you go. Bashir's got one. Yeah. Let's see if J.B. Pritzker gets one, right? Will Pete Buttigieg have
Possibly.
One?
He hasn't yet.
Yeah. Especially the ones who are up from 2026. I mean, the ones who are running right now for governor again, Westmore, and Shapiro's already doing it, but Westmore, you know, J.B. Pritzker in Illinois. We'll see if after that election's over, if they then come out in January with a whole new effort to define
Release something.
Yeah. So the book primary is happening. It's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And, you know, we're also looking at kind of travel and kind of where people are showing up on media, on television shows, podcasts. So the question is do you want to revisit our predictions on who's running and who's not running? Because there were a bunch of candidates. I mean, there's so many people who could possibly run who have not, who we didn't cover in the first one. Do you want to go back and
relook at those?
All right, so let me refresh everybody's memory of what we predicted in the first episode when we went through the first like 8 or 10 candidates. Now, you and I agreed on each one of these, which I'm sure was created thrilling listening for people. But so our yeses were Gavin Newsom, Josh Shapiro, Pete Buttigieg, Wes Moore. We said no on AOC, Kamala Harris, Gretchen Whitmer. not a great look that we said no for all three women, the top women candidates, and yes to the men candidates. We also said no to John Stewart and Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
So has anything happened in the last 4 weeks or so since we did that that would change your mind on any of those candidates?
Nothing changes my mind on any of those candidates, but I would add a candidate to go at your last point about the women that we said probably weren't going to run. Alyssa Slotkin.
Okay.
The senator from Michigan,
okay.
National security profile. She's got a. She's been out there very forward leaning in the party, talking about how we handle some of these big issues with Trump, staying focused from her national security background. She was one of the other senators who made that video that Mark Kelly got in trouble for, that they tried to fuck him down from his rank from captain. So Alyssa Slotkin's been out there, and then also the governor of Virginia. Which we maybe should start to put her in that mix. Abigail's
family. In the mix.
So we maybe should start to put her in that mix too.
Yeah, I mean, I think Alyssa Slotkin had a quote that was like, you know, what plays in the Midwest will play on the coasts, but that the reverse is not necessarily true. So I thought that was sort of an interesting statement for her to kind of position herself as, you know, look, it's Michigan, it's the Midwest. This is where you need to be looking, and these are the issues that we need to be focusing on. Now, I think that reads to a lot of people like centrism is the way to go, and I think that's kind of the theme of this entire podcast is this sort of center left philosophy. Versus a more progressive leftward leaning philosophy and the tension that's going to go into this race. And that's what's going to make it interesting. All right. So I will start with the list. So the person that we talked about last time when we were on with Adrian Elrod, Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky.
Yeah,
we did not cover him last time. I mean, I think he's certainly a yes. He's even said so. He's one of the few people who've actually said that they might be interested in running for president. He's trying to get through the cycle as the head of the Governors Association, trying to win as many Democratic governor seats as possible. And then he says he's going to talk to his family to decide whether he's running. He's got a book out. He's been traveling to all of the big states. So, you know, we don't know the calendar, but I would say at the travel trifecta of South Carolina, New Hampshire, and Nevada. And if you've gone to those three states in the last year, you're probably thinking about doing it. And I think he's gone to those three plus Michigan. So I'm a strong yes on Beshear. He's at least going to try. So
yeah, I don't even think Beshear at this point is trying to cover it up too well. I think he's getting in this thing.
Yeah. And somebody else who's been to all four in the last year, Mark Kelly, senator from Arizona. What do you think about him and his odds of getting in?
You know, I think he's thinking about it. I think he may have even said that in public, that he's thinking about it. You know, he's one of my choices that I think is really a strong candidate. Now, people have talked about whether or not he can be really good on the stump. And so we'll have to see. You know, I always believe, context is king, but, you know, you got to put these horses on the track. Let's see how they run. It all can sound good.
Yep.
You know, the cars all like hum well when they're sitting waiting to go out. But once you get them on the track and you see how they handle the corners, then you can have a real good sense of whether or not one of these candidates can win.
All right, J.B. Pritzker.
He seems like he's in. He had a really good election day, J.B. Pritzker. You know, he won the Senate seat that was contested, and a lot of people were pushing back on his lieutenant governor. And it's funny. So, you know, there was if you have not been following this, the Congressional Black Caucus in Congress, the U.S. Congressional Black Caucus, was supporting Robin Kelly, who is the member of Congress from Chicago, one of the members from the Chicago area. They were supporting her for running. The governor was supporting his lieutenant governor. Now, there was a big contest about who was also an African-American woman. There's a big contest that was happening because the CBC members were saying that the governor, you know, was opposing them. But here he was supporting his African-American woman lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. What was he supposed to do? if for some reason J.B. Pritzker did not support his lieutenant governor for governor, I mean for Senate, I think people would have been mad at him about that. I certainly would have been, mad at him about that.
Yeah.
So I think he did the right thing. Even if she had lost that campaign, you're supposed to ride with the ones who bring you. And that's what he did.
Yep. Yep, completely agree. Yeah, I think he'll probably be in. Now, he has not done much travel. Now, that may be because he is up for election this November, so he's got to get through that first. Obviously, money is no problem for Pritzker, so he can self-fund the campaign.
$3 billion plus dollars. $3 billion.
Yeah, so he's going to take a shot and see what happens. I think there's almost no chance that he doesn't run. You mentioned him before, Cory Booker. Going to try again?
You know, Cory Booker just got married. he's got a new book out. He's traveling around the country. He's doing big speeches. He is certainly, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, is starting to look a lot like a duck. So
I might be a presidential candidate. That's right. All right. Staying in Illinois, Rahm Emanuel, the former mayor of Chicago, ambassador to Japan. He's been doing a lot of policy speeches around the country. What I hear is a lot of consultants are talking about Rahm Emanuel. I don't know if a lot of people out there, like in voters, are talking about Rahm Emanuel, but
yeah.
I don't know if you've
got any. The consultants are talking about him. I think he's leaning into it. I saw him speak up in New York at a small group. He's definitely leaning in on some of the big issues. He's not declaring himself a candidate yet. But people are paying attention to him. Rahm's, I think the question for him is whether or not sober and policy-oriented politics are going to play in 2028,
right,
the way they've played in previous elections before Donald Trump. And it may be that Donald Trump has changed the field enough and tapped into something different that it may not be a Gavin Newsom, but somebody's got to play the Gavin Newsom game in order to, in order to really have a shot at this thing. We just don't know.
Yeah, and I think Rahm's got a reputation of being tough, and I think the people are going to want that. They're going to want somebody who's a fighter and is really going to take it to the Republicans in 2028. Chris Murphy, senator from Connecticut.
I guess he shows up at some places. I don't know if he pulls the trigger. I don't know. What do you think? You're a Connecticut candidate guy.
I've worked for Connecticut senators running for president before. We talked about AOC. Like, there does seem to need to be somebody in that Bernie lane. And I don't think Chris Murphy is exactly that person, but I think that he may have been setting himself up to be at least left of most of these other candidates. And so maybe he's kind of setting himself up as the sort of acceptable, like he's acceptably moderate, but he's actually holding a number of pretty progressive positions. So I think that may be the lane that he's thinking of. And if AOC doesn't run, there is going to be some space there, because I don't think there's not a clear and obvious sort of Bernie, Mamdani sort of really progressive left candidate outside of AOC right now. So I think it'd be interesting if he tries to get some of that energy. I don't know if he'll be able to do it.
Yeah, look, and the math is changing, but I don't know if it's changed that much. I mean, the reality is, if we think about who our Democratic presidential nominees were, who've won in the last half century, right? I mean, Jimmy Carter was from Georgia. Bill Clinton was from Arkansas. Barack Obama was from Illinois. Now, Joe Biden won. He was from Delaware, but it's hard to... 2024 was such an odd year in so many different ways.
So weird.
2020, I'm sorry, not 2024, 2020.
Right.
So it's hard to do the math on that. So for me, I would like to have a candidate who's not from the Northeast. I think that has some bearing to it. Like, you know, if we had somebody like, you know, if Pritzker's from Illinois, I think, Shapiro's from, it's kind of Northeast, it's Pennsylvania, but if you're in Pittsburgh, you know, that ain't the Northeast. Kelly, who's from Arizona, so we do have candidates who are not from kind of Northeastern states, or even California for that matter.
Yep. All right, another not East Coast state, Ruben Gallego from Arizona.
I think he also gets in to take a look at it. I think they got a rock, paper, scissors, this thing, him and Mark Kelly. I don't know if you can get two candidates from Arizona running in the same primary, how that works out. You got to raise the money. Look, you know this.
There's not going to be enough money for everybody.
You know this. Yeah. Like, campaigns don't end because they run out of ideas. They end because they run out of money. You know, people keep going as long as they can pay for it.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, we've got another two-senator situation in the state of Georgia, because we've got Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff that are both talking about it. Do you have opinions on either of those two?
I think neither one of them runs. I think neither one runs.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Now, we'll see if Ossoff I mean, you take a look. I mean, we'll see if Ossoff maybe tries to fill something that's a little bit more progressive, that progressive lane. Maybe that's something we should pay attention to.
He's running this. He's up for re-election this year, though.
Yeah,
correct?
He is. Is that tough, right? Race, really tough.
Yeah,
race.
So he's got to get through that, and it's hard to be super progressive in Georgia and win a statewide race. Yeah, so he's, his setup is a little bit difficult. But I do. There are people that are talking about him kind of as an interesting candidate. Did you make a call on Alyssa Slotkin? Do you think?
I think that she does what a lot of candidates do. I think she does the circuit. I don't know if she pulls the trigger, but you know, some of these people are running for vice president too. I mean, you know, like they're not all.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's very true.
you run for president to get your name out there, get a little vetting, and that makes you more likely to be in the VP candidate. I mean, look, if you think about it, Kamala Harris ran. She became vice president to Joe Biden. Joe Biden ran. He, you know, in 2008, he became vice president to Barack Obama. George Bush ran. He became vice president to Ronald Reagan. So there is a, you know, there is kind of a history of people picking another candidate to run with them.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so just a couple more. And actually, I will say on Michigan, you know, your comment about not wanting somebody from the Northeast, I put a hedge on Gretchen Whitmer when we did this the first time. And like, you know, I was thinking it doesn't look like she's doing it. She's not doing the kind of like wide travel that she probably could be because she's, you know, she's done with her term. So she could be out there all over the place and she's not. So that makes it look like she's probably not running. But I do think
she does
that,
have a book.
Like that,
she
that
does
Michigan
have a book.
State appeal. She does have a book, or does she have a book, or she has a she started a Substack?
No, she had a book called Big Gretch, which is like,
I didn't see that. Okay,
yeah, it was out. It's been out for a year or so. She does have a book, and so or True Gretch. That's what it's called. It's called True Gretch. Her nickname in Michigan, people call her Big Gretch because she was like a whole like rap song about it. But True Gretch, like True Grit, was her book.
All right, just a couple more. So Gina Raimondo, the former governor of Rhode Island and Commerce Secretary, she's actually said, I'm actually thinking about running for president, that she's not necessarily done with her public service, and she's like considering kind of what may be out there for her next.
Listen, I will say everybody who worked with her in the Commerce Department and the Biden administration thought she was running for president. So I think it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle once it's already infected. It's infected the host. The host body can't get rid of the wannabe president thing easily.
Yeah, the issue for her is just going to be name recognition, and especially with so many people running. And you know, like we'll have DNC debates like we did several cycles ago, where you've got, you know, basically you have to do two nights of debates because there's so many candidates running. You know, and how do you get onto that first night, or even if they're mixing them up, how do you get the attention that you need to really be able to do it? I think that may be her problem. So,
oh, remember that when we had all those candidates running and they had the two night stages. It was like the A team and the JV team. No, it was horrible if you got on the wrong.
It's not great. And even when they mixed them up, you know, you're not necessarily on with, you know, you want to be on up against like a Bernie Sanders or a Joe Biden. So you're up, you know, being able to interact with the top contenders who are going to get the most time and get the most attention.
They're
going to
get all that.
It'll be tough with all these people in.
They're going to get all that ink. And I've been on a minor league presidential campaign, and it is not fun when people aren't writing about your guy.
I wouldn't say it wasn't fun. It was hard. It was really, really, really hard. I you know, made some great friends on the dot campaign. It was, you know, it was awesome just to be on that campaign, to spend a bunch of time with Senator Dodd, and the travel was great, and I learned a ton. So it was a fun campaign, even if it was hard electorally, and kind of seeing 1% for months on end. That's tough. All right, there's three more. Ro Khanna, congressman from Silicon Valley.
I saw Ro Khanna this weekend at CNN. You know, he's been saying that he is going to look at it after the midterms are over.
Yep.
We'll see if he gets in. I mean, he's kind of an interesting guy. Like, he had a tech background, but he's also been a skeptic about some of the big tech issues, social media platforms and whatnot. So, you know, we'll see. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it sounds like he's losing some friends over the wealth tax in California. But I do think, you know, and I think the stuff that he's doing with Tom Massie, you know, trying to the War Powers Resolution and, you know, the work on releasing the Epstein files, I think there's some interesting stuff there. I don't know that he's going to be a James Garfield and go from the House to the White House, but we will see. Yeah. All right, Governor of Virginia, Abigail Spanberger.
We mentioned her a minute ago. I think people will call on her to do it. you know, Virginia is that weird state. You know this. You only get one term. So at some point, you got to get out. Yeah. You got to get out of the politics or you run for president. So we'll see. I don't know. Doug Wilder did it 30 years ago when he was governor of, he was the first black governor of Virginia. She's the first woman governor of Virginia. Yep. So, you know, she's got some precedent to at least go out there and take a stab at it.
That's good. All right. Last one. Kind of the sort of out of, you know, sort of left field one, Stephen A. Smith. People have been talking that he is interested in running for president. What, do you have any insight onto Stephen?
I don't know, but you know what they say. Stephen A. Smith doesn't want to run anything but his mouth. I can't even get it out. Stephen A. runs his mouth, not runs for president. So we'll see. Maybe he does it, but I doubt it.
We'll see.
It's a different game. It's a really different game.
Yeah, I thought it was you and I had a conversation with somebody who talked about Cuban and that he actually is, and Mark Cuban is actually interested in running for president, but maybe even as an independent and kind of maybe if there's like too far of a left candidate for the Democrats, he gets in sort of in the end. I hope that he does not do that. I see that as spoiling it for the Democrats and almost handing another 4 years to the Republicans in the White House.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting to hear that he's like seriously kind of considering it and thinking about it.
Now, Joe Rogan wants to run. If Joe Rogan wants to run, you know, I'm all for that. Maybe he'll soak up some of that MAGA energy, sensible MAGA.
Well, and you know, the person we didn't talk about when we did the Republicans is Tucker Carlson. He is getting a lot of attention right now. And so a lot of people are talking about him. And he's kind of got sort of that sort of weird kind of right charisma that, you know, I think really appeals to a lot of Republican voters.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's much smarter than Trump, but he's got sort of a, I don't know, there's sort of a kind of a Trumpian charisma or ability to him in kind of the way that he presents himself. So I think I could actually see him being, if he decides to do this, I think he could actually make some waves in the Republican Party.
Yeah, bow tie MAGA. You know, we'll see.
He doesn't wear the bow tie anymore.
He doesn't wear the bow tie anymore. In my mind, Tucker Carlson is always in like a bow tie and khakis.
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
All right. That's our list. I think we'll keep running through it and seeing where these candidates stack up, what moves they make, and whether or not anybody's getting more definitive as we get further into this year.
Yeah, that's great. And let me give two recommendations, though, before we get out of here. So today is National Run for Office Day, and that is started by an organization called Run for Something, which is run by Amanda Littman. They started in 2017. They have encouraged, I think they've recruited 250,000 candidates across the country as of January of this year, since 2017. They're at runforsomething.net. If you do not like the way the Democratic Party runs, you've got to run for something. So, you know, that can be for an office, that you could be a delegate. You could try to even run for the Democratic National Committee itself. But if you go to their website, they'll be able to give you resources to be able to do that. So if you don't like it, you don't like what things are doing, then you got to step up. It's not easy. That's a major commitment. The other thing, the other thing is there's a website called nobodyslistening.net, and it's run by this former operative named Jesse Lyric. He is deep diving into the 2028 race in much the same way that we are. He has done a ton of work tracking kind of who's going where, who's raising what money, what media appearance candidates have done. It is an awesome resource if you really want a deep dive into this this primary this far out, and it's at nobodyslistening.net. He does a weekly newsletter, but the big beautiful tracking spreadsheet is he's done an amazing job. We should definitely have him on the podcast at some point have a chat with him at some point, because he's right in the exact same space that we are.
Good I'd love to see it. And that site is the list and all that. It's pretty amazing when you see what he's pulling together.
Yeah.
It's a big list of all the things that are happening. My advice to everybody is, it's beautiful outside. Take us for a walk. Download us in your phone. Go for
your
a
headphones.
Walk and listen to another episode of Trailblaze, because it is beautiful. After a long, brutal winter, go outside and get some sun. Thanks for coming.